Hello and welcome to Up, Up and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mario Benessi. I'm back, guys. I think I finally figured out a way in which I can get an episode out to you at least every week. I really want to try and go for that because I've been doing this for 2 years and I'm kind of saddened by the fact that as of this recording, we're only 22 episodes in. And I've had the time, and I've had the opportunity to do it several times, and I haven't taken that chance simply because I chose not to. And I feel like I've been letting the fans down, the listeners of this show, the people who have supported me since the very beginning and have continued to support me, and the new people who have decided to check out the show and become avid listeners. I feel like I've not been giving you guys the content with the frequency that you deserve. So from here on out, and you can hold me to this, I'm going to try and get the show back on to a weekly release schedule. Now it might be maybe 1 or 2 weeks where, you know, things get a little bit hectic, and you know, that's just part of me being in college and working a job that's more or less full-time. I'm not paid full-time, obviously. That would be just, you know, too nice. But, you know, that's a different topic. But I would like to try and get this show back on track as a weekly podcast like I had originally intended and how I had it for at least the first maybe 12 episodes, maybe 11. So I really want to get it back to that for your guys' sake and for my sake, because I like talking about Superman. You know, so much so that I started a YouTube channel. Again, shameless plug, where I talk about Superman-related items, where I go in and cover those items and discuss the strengths of certain figures or the weaknesses and what I really think of them. There is no denying that I love Superman. So any outlet for me to express myself is greatly welcomed in my eyes, and hopefully, you know, you guys are still going to be along for the ride. So with that out of the way, I'd really like to just, you know, jump into this episode. So here we are, the 22nd episode of the Up, Up, and Away podcast. And in this episode, we're going to be taking a look at issues 3 and 4 of John Byrne's 1986 miniseries, The Man of Steel. It seems like there is some sort of force in the universe that it's trying to stop me from recording episodes. And as silly as it, you know, it just sounds silly. But last week, my computer froze up on me, forcing me to restart my computer. And then the second time, when I had finished typing up my notes, my word processor quit on me. And, well, this time, I don't know what happened. I was reviewing the issues. I was just, you know, going through them and refreshing them. I find that doing the issue notes off the top of my head or as I flip through the book is a little bit easier on me. It takes less time. But anyway, I was in the middle of going through the last issue for this episode, and my power cuts out. And, you know, if you don't know, I don't know if I've mentioned it or not, but I'm a resident assistant. I'm pretty much a glorified babysitter. So, you know, I make sure that the residents in the dorms aren't doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. I take care of, like, drug and alcohol incidents and all that stuff. But I'm also, you know, kind of like a guidance counselor in some respects. And, you know, it's really helped me develop as a leader and as a person. And, there are a lot of problems with the political side of the job, but the residents make it all worth it. Anyway, that was a weird tangent. My room cut out, so I called one of my bosses and I said, hey, you know, my power went out. Is there a way we can flip the breaker? And so we flipped the breaker, and for a second we thought everything was all good. My lights were working, and, you know, I took that as a sign that, all right, well, the power's back on, you know. So she goes back downstairs. I'm on the 7th floor, mind you. And I go to check my laptop to make sure that everything's being charged. You know, I check to make sure that my Christmas lights are working, because I just find it a little bit more of a relaxed mood than the harsh, bright white lights of a residence hall. And nothing in there is working. None of the electrical outlets are functioning at all. So I called my boss again, and I said, hey, hold on, before you leave, my, like, the lights are working. That's That's not the issue. The outlets aren't. So if you happen to hear any screaming or yelling or really loud, terrible music, that's because I am currently recording this episode within the confines of a study room in the lobby. So I'm recording this at 11 o'clock at night, so it should be quiet, but, you know, kids will be kids. But, yeah, that's pretty much what's going on, you know. But, hey, you know, that's part of being a podcaster. I promised an episode by Saturday, and gosh darn it, I'm going to get that episode out to you guys. You know, because I promised, and I'd like to consider myself a man of my word. But, yeah, not too much has been going on in the world of Superman. We're coming closer to the release of the director's cut of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, there really hasn't been much going on in the world of Superman. It's, I mean, a couple of small things and some announcements from Funko for their San Diego Comic-Con exclusive pop figures. They are releasing a Superman figure that is supposed to resemble the statue from Batman v Superman where he's got the words "false god" spray painted across his chest that Scoop McNairy's character plays. You know, he's spray painted that as, you know, an act of defiance against the Man of Steel and trying to voice his frustration with the guy. It's an okay figure. I mean, I want to get it because I'm a completionist and I have to have everything Superman. But upon further inspection, I noticed that it was, and this might just be the, just, you know, the production photo, but I really doubt it because of the second figure and all of the other exclusives that they've announced for this year's Comic-Con. It looks like they just retooled the body mold from the Man of Steel pop, which has since been retired, and it's going to cost an arm and a leg to get that. And they took the current head mold from the regular Superman for Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, the pop final figures for that line. And they just put that head on the Man of Steel body and spray-painted it sober and put the words "false god" on it. I'm still going to get it. I'm going to try to get it. I know the resale value is going to be ridiculously expensive. Part of buying convention exclusives, hopefully it's not too pricey. I know that the black suit Man of Steel Superman is going for at least $100 on eBay. So it might have to be just something that, you know, I just gradually save away for. The second figure that they announced is one of their 6-inch figures, which is supposed to be for, like, the larger scale characters, like monsters, or, like, you know, characters like Thanos. Big characters. And it is Doomsday from Batman v Superman. It looks alright. Still probably gonna try and pick it up. I mean, I have all the other Superman figures from that line. The only one I'm missing is the metallic variant, but I can go and get that at my local Toys R Us. They have a lot of them. So that's pretty much all that there's been for Superman news. We've got Comic-Con coming up. Oh, that reminds me. Justice League announcements happened on Tuesday. We got the reveal of the Justice League logo. I don't know if it's like word for, I doubt it's going to be word for word this. But they got a, you know, they gave us a peek at the scene where Bruce Wayne meets Barry Allen for the first time, and to show off how that the film has changed in tone considerably since the films Man of Steel and Batman v Superman. Because, you know, from what I understand, Warner Brothers is starting to realize that, hey, maybe putting out movies that are critically divisive is not a great idea to get this movie franchise universe off the ground. So they're shifting tones, which is great, because they kind of need it. And I think Suicide Squad's going to be good. I'm looking forward to that. The trailers really sold me on that. I wasn't exactly sold on Jared Leto as the Joker, but seeing more and more of him, I think he's going to do a pretty good job. But they revealed the scene, or at least, you know, a kind of a synopsis of what happens, and you get this feeling that there is going to be more levity to this script. And, you know, I've read interviews from, I think, Zack Snyder and Chris Terrio, who wrote the screenplay for Batman v Superman, or at least took over from David S. Goyer when he was canned from the script. Jeff Johns and Ben Affleck have also confirmed that the script is going to be, well, the script and the movie is going to be a lot lighter in tone and not Marvel bubblegum pop. And not to say that the Marvel movies are bad. You know, they put out some pretty good films, but they all just kind of follow the same formula. Everybody's a wisecracking goofball, and everybody dies, but not really. And I mean, yeah, we're probably going to go through the same... No, we are going through the same thing with the Superman from Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. And again, spoilers, Superman dies at the end of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. He's coming back. He's been hinted at coming back. It wouldn't be a Justice League film without Superman. And I know a lot of people are frustrated with the fact that Superman's kind of just been shooed off to the side and that he's going to be kind of shoehorned into like maybe the last 5 or 10 minutes of the film Justice League, or at least part one of Justice League, which, by the way, is a standalone film, stands on its own merits, and it ties into the second Justice League film without being one of those really bad movies where, like, they set up a cliffhanger and it's a bad cliffhanger. But a lot of people are showing a lot of concern that, or, well, mostly frustration that Superman's just kind of being shoot off to the side. And I can understand that. And, you know, for the most part, DC and Warner Brothers haven't really known how to handle Superman for a very long time. You know, we've gotten films where, like Superman Returns, as much as I enjoyed the film, that's doesn't exactly scream Superman. I mean, there are parts that do, but it was just a poor handling of the character. Man of Steel, while I liked it, I can see why other people didn't, and yeah, I can agree that the film should have been a little bit more lighter in tone and featured Superman smiling a little bit more. And while I've never been angry at Superman, I've been frustrated with the writers, because ultimately it's the writers that are writing these stories. Look at The Final Days of Superman. That, I mean, and it's sad, and I meant to touch on this in the previous episode, it's sad that they had to kill the New 52 Superman. I would have loved to have seen him, because I felt that, you know, as time progressed, he would become more supermanly in his own right. He would go through these rites of passage where he would learn how to be less brash and less abrasive and less punch first, ask questions later. There were moments where he did show potential to be the Superman, but they kind of squandered it. And in order to save both their flagship character, or at least one of their flagship characters, they had to kill him. And it's sad that they did have to kill him. Because in those final moments, in those final 8 issues, the last 2 issues from every Superman title, excluding Superman Lois and Clark, or at least the mainline continuity ones, featured a Superman I wanted to read and had been wanting to read for the past 5 years. This was a Superman who I felt was written well, selflessly, cracked jokes, but not to the extent of him being obnoxious or corny. He had a light spirit to him, despite facing his own mortality. He knew he was dying, but he still kept on fighting the good fight. That is the Superman I wanted to read about. And while we've gotten the post-crisis Superman back, and the stories that have been told through the Rebirth event have been phenomenal, absolutely wonderful stories. Stories that I've been interested in since day one, since the announcements were made several months back, since the solicitations were released. It's still sad that we had to lose the New 52 Superman. So yeah, DC hasn't really known how to handle their characters unless the fans told them otherwise. And that's kind of sad, because you'd think that owning a character for close to 80 years, you would have a good idea of how to handle the character. And it's not just the Superman character that I've seen a lot of people have problems with. People had problems with Batman straight up killing people in Batman v Superman. People have had a problem with the DC Cinematic Universe iterations of the characters. And I feel that maybe some change is needed. Actually, no, change is needed. And this kind of segues me into my next topic. I think that Zack Snyder kind of needs to go. And I know he's still attached to direct the Justice League film, and I think the second part of that. But I think he needs to go. If he wants to stay on as visual director, that's fine. He has some absolutely great ideas on how to do action scenes and stuff. But storytelling in a fashion that's supposed to be uplifting is not necessarily his forte. He's great at doing the darker, grimmer, more gritty things, like Watchmen or 300. I really like those movies. I still really like those movies. Yeah, they have some problems. But overall, I think they're great films. Where was I? I feel like I got really off topic. That was one massive segue. It's been 21 minutes, and it's probably going to be shorter when I edit this down. But the point is, I understand why people are frustrated or concerned. You know, I've heard people say things like, it's kind of going to be like Luke Skywalker in Star Wars The Force Awakens. Yeah, he was there, but only for like the last 3 minutes. If that's how they're going to play it, well, I don't want to say that, you know, we'll just have to suck it up and deal with it, because that just kind of puts the emotions of every longtime fan to the wayside. Just says, all right, well, you know, you guys don't really matter. What really matters is Batman and his crew of hero buddies. You know, and I don't want it to become that. I want Superman to be the leader of the Justice League. Now, he may turn out to be the leader. Maybe death will change him. So hopefully everything gets worked out. So I'm going to go take a quick commercial break, maybe have myself a little snack, and we will be right back to cover the next two issues in the Man of Steel miniseries. Don't go away.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
All right, and we're back. So last episode, we covered issues 1 and 2 of the Man of Steel miniseries. I mentioned that I had covered the first issue before in my Origins episodes, and one of the issues that we're about to talk about in a previous episode, I covered it in the World's Finest episode. I'm not sure if that's the exact episode title, but I covered that and their pre-crisis meeting. Superman and Batman, that is. So I'm going to try and keep this really quick. You know, I did find that I actually like working without the notes. And we still have the, you know, the information for all the creative team and stuff. So this is Man of Steel, issue number 3. It's cover dated November 1986. The story is entitled One Night in Gotham City. Executive editor is Dick Giordano. Cover art by John Byrne and inks by Dick Giordano. Written and penciled by John Byrne. Inks, again, by Dick Giordano. Colors by Tom Ziuko. Letters by John Costanza. And edited by Andrew Help. It's a rainy night in Gotham City as a low-life criminal runs through the alley where he is. Well, he's pounced on by Batman, and Batman, he's asking him for information on the whereabouts of a criminal. And he's trying to get this information out of him. The guy, whose name is Bull, is not giving him any information at all, saying that if he squeals, then his boss will kill him. And Batman says, all right, well, you know, you can fear being killed by your boss, but I will hurt you. You know, you will be hospitalized. And he's telling him that 8 people have already died, and he's not going to allow any more people to have their lives taken. And so Bull throws some mud and leaves and stuff in Batman's face and runs off. Batman runs after the guy using his, not a grappling hook, but more like a batarang with some string attached to it. And he swoops off into the night, and all of a sudden, one of his lines is caught. Can you guess who? That's right, Superman. Superman catches his line, and he's like, all right, listen, buddy, we're not playing this vigilante game. I'm taking you to the police headquarters. And Batman just drops the line. And Superman, he panics and says, all right, well, I got to catch this guy. He's going to die. I don't think he's got any powers. But he can't find him. Batman says, you know, you don't need invisibility to become invisible. Sometimes you just need some wits and a matchless knowledge of the city. So Superman flies towards him, trying to grab him. He's like, all right, well, you know, I made a mistake last time by grabbing you by your little wire there, Batman, but this time I'm going to scoop you up and take you there. Batman's like, hold up, slow your roll there, buddy. Before you do, you might want to just use your infrared vision. So Superman does that, and he sees that Batman's got a force field around him. Superman says, all right, well, big deal. It's not going to stop me. Batman says, okay, well, you know, it's designed to detect super dense biological material. It's you, Superman. So if you grab me, a bomb somewhere in the city is going to detonate. Superman's just taken aback by this. He's absolutely astounded that somebody would stoop so low, threatening the life of an innocent person to keep Superman from taking Batman into custody. So with Superman at Batman's mercy, Batman pretty much just gives him the lowdown. He says, there's been a person that's been committing these heinous crimes, and it's been going on for a while. I've been working pretty extensively trying to crack this case, and there have been some victims. So one guy, Henry Jarrell, he opened his jewelry store at 7:15 when he noticed that all of his jewels were missing. They were replaced by some sort of metal trinket, and he would have been all right if he hadn't touched them. They were explosives, so he died. The same kind of thing had been happening for the 5 days after that, except with like little twists in between. Chancellor's Diamond Exchange, a gas bomb was left in place of the Regency Emerald, and 3 people died. Williker's Rare Stones and Gems, a gadget that squirted acid, and 2 dead, 1 horribly disfigured. Tannenbaum's Antiques and Collectibles, and this is the most bizarre one. There was a steel rook that shot razor blades, and 3 people dead, 2 hospitalized. And so Batman had been tracking down the lead, which led him to Bull. Now, Batman says that, you know, this is all the work of the villainous named Magpie. Now, elsewhere, Bull confronts his boss, who happens to be Magpie, and she is absolutely floored that he did not try at least once to throw Batman off their trail. Now, another henchman suggests, all right, well, you know, maybe we just hang low for a week or two. She says, no, that's stupid. We don't have a week or two. The Fabergé eggs are going to be in Gotham for another 12 hours, and then they're gone. She just kind of has a little bit of a breakdown. You know, she wants the shiny things. Now, she's still frustrated with Bull. So what she does is she takes a fast-acting paralysis venom and stabs him in the face, and then sticks a stick of dynamite in his mouth and lights it. Yeah, well, he got blown up pretty good. Now, elsewhere, Superman hears the explosion and a woman laughing, and Batman assumes that it's Magpie, that she struck again. So they race off to go find him, and a minute later, they are at the Gotham Museum of Antiques. But it's weird, because it's kind of been neglected for years. There's nothing there to steal. And so, Bull is dead, and one of the henchmen informs his boss that Batman's coming, and there's a guy with an S on his chest. Superman just bursts through the wall. Now, one of the henchmen just decides to take off and leave. His boss tells him to shoot Superman. He's like, no, I'm not doing that. Guy just punched through a stone wall. I'm getting out of here. So the one henchman that's left starts opening fire on Superman, and their bullets and Superman do not mix. If Superman had a dollar for every time that some stupid criminal shot him with a gun, he would be a millionaire. Superman's having none of it, and he just, next panel, clenches the gun. It's gone. Batman takes care of the other henchmen, and before they can capture Magpie, she drops a vial of an almost acidic gas. So Superman, he uses his super lungs, and he inhales the gas, flies up and away out of the building, and then releases the gas into space where it crystallizes and becomes neutralized so it won't hurt anybody else. And he flies back to Gotham, where he sees Batman. Now, Batman has his car. Now, this isn't the Batmobile. Not yet. This is early on in Batman's career. But he still has one of the most high-tech crime labs in the trunk of his car. So he's looking at a piece of fiber that was attached to the vial that Magpie had dropped that she used to try to kill them. He assumes that since it was in her bag, that it must give them a clue. And he is right. It's kind of a bit of a hunch there, Batman, and a little bit of a plot convenience that the thread happens to be, and this is the big clue for what the villain's main goal was, a thread that dates back 5,000 years. So Batman hops in his car and flies off. Elsewhere at a museum in Gotham, Magpie just has another breakdown. She's yelling and screaming how all these months of careful planning and setting everything up just been completely thwarted by these two goofs in colorful costumes. And she kind of just tries to justify with herself that she is not a villain, that she is not on the wrong side of the law. She says to herself, I replaced their things. I gave them new things. It was like trading, and it's their fault. They went and touched the items. They killed themselves, really. And Batman appears out of the shadows and says, all right, well, I figured out what you were up to, where you were, you know, your entire plan. Superman reveals that the villainess's real name is Margaret Pye, and she just absolutely has a mental breakdown. She just falls to her knees and cries, and Superman feels bad for her. Of course he does. You know, he's a very compassionate guy. And Batman does feel bad for her, too. She's just a person with a frail psyche. She got pushed over the edge, and she's not like all the other low-life criminals that he's been facing. But he also feels bad for the people that have been killed. Now, 20 minutes later, the police arrive to take Magpie away, and Superman just kind of admits, all right, well, you know, I'm not too crazy about you being a vigilante there, but this is a rough city. It's way different than Metropolis. It needs a special kind of protector, and you seem to be doing a pretty good job. And Batman's like, all right, well, you know, I've kind of been running 4 days without any sleep, so I kind of need to go do that because I'm human to continue my private war. Superman says, all right, well, hold up there, buddy. We still have that issue of the bomb that you have somewhere in the city to deal with. Now, Batman pulls out a little, detonator or something from his utility belt, and he says, it was with me the entire time. I wouldn't put somebody else's life in danger. So Superman flies away, and he says, all right, well, keep fighting the good fight, I guess, but, you know, the minute you slip up, it's going to be some trouble because you blow it for all of us. And Batman is left to muse that perhaps in a different reality, he might have called Superman a friend. I believe I gave my thoughts on this issue in that World's Finest episode, and, you know, they still kind of ring true today. Byrne, in some places, does a really good Batman, but the last page where you see the blue in Batman's suit for the cowl and the cape and the gloves, I think that looks great. I'm not too big of a fan of where he where the colors, this isn't really Byrne's fault as much as it is Giordano's, and nothing against Dick Giordano. I think he does fantastic work, or at least he did fantastic work, and he brought so much life and depth to these drawings. But I'm not a fan of Batman just constantly being in black. It just kind of takes away from John Byrne's art just a little bit. It's not too bad. But the pages that we do get to see the colors in Batman's suit, they are phenomenal. Again, Superman is drawn excellently. And I think John Byrne does a really great job of shifting tones. And this has, you know, quite a bit to do with the talent that is Dick Giordano. But this issue is... the colors are just more gothic in nature as opposed to the other issues in this miniseries where everything... You know, there are some moments set at night or in less than colorful situations. But for the most part, it's all bright colors, blue skies, triumphant shades of yellows and oranges. And in this issue, it's purples and dark blues and blacks. And it all works. I love it a lot. The flashbacks are really cool. I love how the characters are colored in kind of like a gold color. And that's really interesting because usually they just show these things as either in their regular colors or in like muted versions of their colors. So like if we're dealing with a character that's in blue, maybe like a very soft blue, a very, very soft blue. But these ones are in yellow, which is actually really cool. The script is pretty awesome. The page where Superman just bursts through the wall, I absolutely love it. Scream Superman, and it reminds me very much of George Reeves busting through those walls and all those episodes of the Adventures of Superman TV show. The two panels where Superman deals with the criminal that's shooting a gun at him. Actually, it's three panels, really. You have the panel where the guy is shooting the gun and he's opening fire, and he's got this terrified look on his face, even though he's got sunglasses. You know, Superman just this steely expression, and the bullets are ricocheting off of him. Very next panel, not even a motion in between. Crunch. Guy just standing there, baffled. Absolutely love it. I think this is a really good issue overall. There's a reason why John Byrne's miniseries is one of my favorite stories for Superman. Not my absolute favorite, but one of my top five. So let's go into the next issue. And it was also cover dated November 1986 because this was on a bi-weekly release. Same creative team. This issue is entitled Enemy Mine. So we open with Lois Lane at Clark Kent's door, and Clark is not ready. There's a party that they're supposed to be going to, and he is not ready at all. Lois is dressed to the nine in this really fancy getup, and she looks great. Lois goes inside of Clark's apartment, and she sees that it's all nice and neat and spick and span, and that she wouldn't have really expected less from a guy who never has so much as a typo in his stories. She says, you know, usually with bachelor pads, they're just kind of messy. Clark says, well, you know, I've got other interests. I do things. I'm not here all the time, so it makes sense for my place to be at least presentable. Lois questions that he even has interests with the number of stories that he's turned in over the last year and a half. Now, this is something that I really thought was cool about this this series. There are skips in time, which is awesome because it goes from day one of him being Superman to 5 years down the road. Now, Lois sees a kind of a small display where he's got a picture of him in his football gear, and he's got a pennant from Smallville High and a couple of trophies, and she asks him, hey, did you play in high school? I didn't know that. Clark's like, yeah, no, I played in high school. I don't play anymore, but I try to stay in shape. She comes across a picture of Ma and Pa Kent, and she just starts to tear into Clark. She says, they look like a very nice couple. How did they wind up with a son who's such a swine? And Clark is, he's trying to keep it together. It's been 18 months, and Lois just snaps back at him. It's been 17 months, 2 weeks, 4 days, and an odd number of hours. She's not going to let him live it down. And Clark's just kind of puzzled how she can be so mad at him when they didn't even know each other. And Lois says that it's not a matter of them knowing each other when he published the story about Superman. It's more that some random schmo off the street came in, got the story published with no experience, and he got the story of the century. And she's just frustrated. She can't take any more of this. So she just tells him, all right, well, go shave. So Clark's like, all right, well, I'll be out in 10 minutes. So he plugs in his razor just to kind of give the illusion that he is shaving, or at least doing it by conventional human methods. He takes off his glasses and uses a piece of metal from his rocket and uses his heat vision to zap away the scruff, which is pretty cool. 10 minutes later, he comes out of the bathroom and Lois is messing around with his weight. She starts to question, how do you stay in shape? Those plates are really light. And Clark thinks to himself, oh, crap, I didn't even think about that. Things are really light to me. I didn't consider that. So he tries to excuse it away as being, oh, well, they're old weights. And he notices that Lois is heading towards the stairway instead of the elevator. So he wonders why she's doing that. And he asks her. And Lois says, there's a helicopter waiting for us. Clark asks, what? A helicopter? Why? That can't be legal. This building isn't built to hold that kind of weight. And Lois is like, yeah, no, it's more than likely illegal. But hey, Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor set it all up. So they fly away in the helicopter. And Lois gives Clark the scoop on Luthor, how he's the richest man in Metropolis and how he's got a reputation for doing some questionable things, but kind of all balances out because he's got money and he's smart, and you know, people just kind of sweep it under the rug because he'll donate a bunch of money to charity. Now, in the middle of the Metropolis Harbor, they land on a cruise ship owned by Lex Luthor, and they just kind of explore, and Clark makes a comment about how Lois and Lex are an item. Lois just having none of it. She says, if you were such a good reporter, you should be a little bit more observant. We're not an item. He's basically a collector. He wants to have one of everything in the world, and he's been trying to get Lois because she's not giving in to him. Now, at this point, one of the workers for the ship show them around, and they all comment on how big the ship is, and you know, it's only the best, and it's cost a lot of money, and Lex Luthor spared no expense. And suddenly, Lex Luthor appears. And this is a different Lex Luthor than a lot of people are used to seeing. He is not bald. He is balding, but he's got red hair, and he's just smoking on a cigar. So he greets Lois, and he greets Clark, and he says, hey, congratulations on breaking the Superman story. You know, that's awesome. You know, you do great work. And Clark is just so humble here. He says, you know, it was really nothing. And he says, oh, no, your article was great, your work is great. You know, I'm just kind of surprised that you decided to decline the Metropolis Newspaper Guild Special Award of Excellence for that story. Clark says, oh, well, you know, getting the job at the Daily Planet was reward enough. You know, it didn't seem fair to accept it. Lex Luthor's like, obviously you're doing something right. You know, you're Lois's guest at one of my soirees. So take that how you will. Kind of surprised that Perry White didn't decide to show up. And Lois says, oh, Lex, you know that Perry absolutely hates you. Another worker comes to meet Lex and says, hey, Mayor Berkowitz and his guest just arrived. And Lex says, all right, well, thank you. I'll be up shortly. And he asks Clark to have a moment alone with Lois. And Clark goes out in the hallway. Lex comments on how great Lois looks in the dress. And Lois is like, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's not every day you get to wear a $5,000 dress. I had to go and get my hair done. That cost me $100 just to get something that looked decent enough with this dress. And Lex says, oh, well, I'm glad you like the gift. And Lois loses it. She is absolutely floored that Lex is pretty much trying to buy her with expensive gifts. And so she calls Clark in from the hallway and asks for his jacket and tells him to stand in front of her while standing as wide as he knows how to be. And she takes the dress off and storms out with Clark's jacket on. And before she leaves, she tells Lex that he might want to look into getting a better barber because he's starting to look like Fred Mertz from I Love Lucy. After they've walked off, Clark asks Lois if she thinks that that last comment was a little bit of a low blow. And Lois is still frustrated. She's been looking forward to this party for months. Great food, great people. And it's been ruined. And she says that nothing can make this night worse. When all of a sudden, a gun is pointed at her face. On the other end of that gun is a group of Hispanic renegades, I guess you would call them. Now Clark jumps in front of Lois to keep her from getting hurt. When one of them takes the gun and, I can't say pistol whip because it's kind of a semi-automatic. But they hit him in the face pretty good. And they tell Lois to keep her mouth shut while they throw Clark off the boat. They then move Lois to the deck of the ship, and they're all being held hostage. Mayor Berkowitz asks where Lex is, you know, with this crisis going on, and we see Lex from a shadowy room with the blinds just slightly open, thinking, perfect. He's obviously orchestrated this. And all of a sudden, the boat is lifted from the water. Everybody's just in a state of confusion. Lois kicks one of the guys and takes his gun, opening fire, not killing any of them, but just making sure that they are kind of subdued. So they're ducking in cover. Superman takes the boat and drops it off at Lex's private island, and he flies up to see Lois making pretty swift work of these villains. One guy tries to get the drop on her and almost kills her before Superman zooms in front of her and reflects the bullets with his impenetrable skin. And this is my favorite bit from this entire miniseries. It's just five panels of Superman slowly crunching up the gun. He gets closer and closer to the handle, and he says, "I'd think about letting go if I were you." He crushes it up, and Mayor Berkowitz congratulates Superman and thanks him for his services. And Lex hands Superman a check. And Superman's absolutely confused about what's going on. It's a check for $25,000. And Lex tells him, "All right, well, you know, you did such a great job, and you're on my payroll now." And Superman says, "All right. Hold on there, buddy. That's not how I work. I don't do it for money. My services are not for hire." Lex is, you know, he's got this cheeky grin on his face. "Oh, nonsense. Everyone who's anyone in Metropolis works for me." And it comes out that Lex had orchestrated the entire thing. He planned it out to test Superman's abilities. Everyone's absolutely furious with Lex, and Lois more so than anybody because of what had happened, and because she is under the impression that Clark Kent was killed. Superman, to cover his tracks, says that he took care of Clark Kent and he's perfectly alright. But Mayor Berkowitz is still pretty angry with Luthor, reckless endangerment. He appoints Superman a special deputy of Metropolis and tells him to arrest Lex Luthor. Lex is like, "Oh, you can't arrest me. I'm the most powerful man in Metropolis." Next page, Lex is getting mug shots taken and his fingerprints put in the records of the police station and put into prison. 3 days later, Superman is flying through the Metropolis subway tunnels to help a woman get to the hospital. She's in labor. And 2 hours later, the baby is born, and he's thinking to himself, you know, it's a good thing I convinced her to not name her child Superman. That's not a very good first name. When all of a sudden he hears a camera taking a picture. Now, he can't find where it is, and this comes into play later on in John Byrne's run. So this is, you know, it's kind of a thing that happens in this issue. Now, he goes to fly off when he's confronted by Lex. Superman asks him what he wants. He thought he'd still be off talking with his lawyers, the ones that had gotten him out of jail 2 hours after he was in prison. And Lex says that he has a message for him. He says that Superman has made a big mistake, a fatal mistake, that Lex runs this town and that the people of Metropolis are his to nurture or destroy as he sees fit, and that they've forgotten that. That they look at Superman with his flashy costume and his powers, and they've forgotten who their master is, who the top dog is. And he intends to remind them, and he's going to show them that Superman is nothing, just a cardboard cutout. And one day, very soon, Superman is going to die. He's going to be destroyed, and Lex will be the one to do it. Everyone in Metropolis will know, Superman will know, and there will be no one to prove it. And he won't be arrested again. Ever. And he walks off, and that's pretty much the end of the issue. I really like this issue. I'm a big fan of the way that Lex had been revamped for a more modern era. Instead of making him a mad scientist, make him a businessman trying to screw the little guy. Which is perfect. Which I think is I like when Lex Luthor was a crazy mad scientist. You know, you can get some really cool science fiction stories out of that. But I feel like the corrupt businessman is a better foil for the Man of Steel. So I'm going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to do the Adventures of Superman episode, and, we got some other stuff planned. Don't go away.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. We'll be right back. Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
Superman and Batman,
Golden Age Superman,
the Superman Fan Podcast,
the DC Comics Presents Show,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
It's Superman,
the Schuster Herald Podcast,
the Kara Zor-El Podcast,
Superman Forever Radio,
Superman Lives,
Up, Up, and Away,
Cadmus to Crisis, a Superboy Podcast,
The Amateur Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast.
The world's best podcast.
And
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
Russell Bragg,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Saab,
Bob Fisher,
Chris Moe,
Mario Benessi,
Drew Wintermeyer,
David Beyer,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
All right, and we're back with the Adventures of Superman episode. This is the fourth episode in the first season entitled Mystery of the Broken Statues. And I'm taking my synopsis from the Superman homepage, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention who wrote the synopsis. It was written by James Lance. If you want to, check out his review of the episode. I think he does a pretty thorough job of going into the intricacies of the episode. Really cool. The original broadcast date was October 10th, 1952. It was written by William C. Joyce, directed by Tommy Carr. And, of course, you have the main cast for The Adventures of Superman, minus Perry White and Jimmy Olsen. You have George Reeves as Clark Kent / Superman, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, and we get Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson. We have Tristan Coffin as Paul Martin, Michael Vallon as Mr. Benelli, Maurice Cass as the owner of the Elite Gift Shop, Philip Pine as Dorn, Martin's associate, Stephen Carr as Mr. Edwards, Wade Crosby as Pete, Buddy Mason as the cop, and Joey Ray as the newsman. Paul Martin and his assistant, Dorn, have just entered Benelli's art craft shop. Martin is a tall, dapper man with a cane, while Dorn is on the short side. They approach a display counter with 10 animal statues. Oddly enough, Dorn smashes all the plaster figures while Martin pays Mr. Benelli for the entire lot. Dorn looks through the debris to search for something. However, the object is nowhere to be found. Shortly after the pair had left, Lois Lane enters the store to pick up a picture that Benelli had repaired for her. She is surprised to learn of the unusual act of vandalism as she looks at the broken shards on the floor. Benelli thinks nothing of it since he was compensated for the damage, but Lois later discovers something else while searching for china egg cups at Edwards China and Ceramics. The pair of men had done the same thing there. Since 3 o'clock p.m., seven shops throughout Metropolis, including Benelli's and Edwards, have fallen victim to Dorn and Martin's strange spree of destruction. Cheap plaster animal statues have all been broken by the pair of men. Seeing a story for the Daily Planet in this, Lois asks Clark for assistance. Despite his initial belief that there is nothing to this, the mild-mannered reporter goes to five of the businesses on Lois's list of possible targets while Lois herself checks the other six. They intend to buy all the figurines they can before Martin and Dorn can break them. This could be the key to solving this bizarre mystery. Two places on our list were already visited by Martin and Dorn, but Lois was able to purchase 15 of the animal figures. She finds a small brass key inside the second one that she has broken. She and Clark are now speaking with each other on the telephone, not realizing that Martin and Dorn have followed Lois. The two reporters compare notes. This includes all the bizarre objects that the pair of vandals had found inside the statues. None of the things make much sense, but they could help Lois and Clark solve the case. Martin and Dorn have just taken Lois in hopes of finding the key she has hidden in her lipstick case. Meanwhile, two men that work for Martin named Pete and Charlie are smashing statues in the Elite gift shop. Clark has telephoned the owner to warn him. However, he doesn't care what the thugs do as long as they pay for what they destroyed. Using Superman's speed and power of flight, Kent enters just before Pete and Charlie leave with 3 cents. After Martin's henchmen put up a bit of a fight, Clark takes them to Metropolis Police Headquarters. Unfortunately, Inspector Bill Henderson cannot hold them on any charges. This is a major setback in our hero's investigation. Lois Lane is missing, and her apartment has been ransacked. No fingerprints were found on the scene, but Clark believes that Paul Martin, one of the top confidence men in all the world, has taken her. We learn that Kent is right as we go to the National Import Company, where Martin had unsuccessfully questioned Lois about the location of the key she had found. Martin is currently making preparations for an airplane to take Lois to the mountains as he finds that which he is searching for in her lipstick case. Now, Martin is one step closer in seeing his plan succeed. As Martin and Dora drive away with a bound and gagged Lois, Clark and Inspector Henderson question Pete. He refuses to answer them until Henderson threatens him with a long prison sentence. Pete tells them of Martin's mountain hideaway in Rock Hollow. He usually gets there with an airplane he keeps at Ramsey Airport. This gives Clark an idea on where to find Lois. He rushes to the airfield of Superman, where Dorn and Lois are about to take off in Martin's ship. Dorn was ordered to keep Lois in Rock Hollow while Martin stays in Metropolis. However, the Man of Steel stops the craft before it can even begin its flight. Now, Dorn is in police custody, and Lois had just been saved by our hero. One acorn, one small dried-up onion, one safety pin, one toy automobile, one little plastic cow, $1 bill, 3 pennies. This is a list of items Martin and his gang had found inside the broken statues. Each object was part of a rebus, a puzzle using images and the place of words to form a phrase. Once the code is cracked by Clark Kent, the solution turns out to be MPO-97. Playing with it further gives Clark, Lois, and Inspector Henderson PO-97M. That means Post Office Box 97 at the main branch of the Metropolis Post Office. Now, all that Clark and the others must do is wait until Martin opens the box at the post office tomorrow morning with the key he had taken from Lois. Paul Martin has taken the package from his post office box. He is then arrested shortly afterwards. We turn our attention to Inspector Henderson's office, where Lois and Clark wait for him to open the parcel. Inside, there is a cheap plaster figure of a pig. Clark smashes the statue to reveal the Rensselaer Ruby, the largest ruby in the world that had been stolen from the London Museum 3 years ago. "What a story," exclaims Lois. "Thanks to Kent here," Inspector Henderson says. "And a Superman," Lois continues. "Well, like I always say, two heads are better than one," Clark calmly comments to the confused pair. I dig this episode so much. There's a lot of great stuff here. The detective work on both Lois's part and Clark's part, it just works out perfectly, and I really like seeing this more investigative journalist-style approach to Clark Kent. I might be wrong on this, but I think I figured out what the big difference is between Season 1 and the other seasons of this series, aside from the more kid-friendly tone and the shifting from the film noir style. I think that the key difference is that these early episodes feature a lot of Clark Kent. And that's not to say that the later episodes didn't really focus on Clark. Clark was the main character for most of the show. But Superman only shows up in this twice. He doesn't do much. He doesn't do anything, actually. All he does is fly from one location to the other twice and stops a plane from taking off. The rest of this is Clark Kent. And it's almost the same thing with the episode before this that I covered in the last episode, where he pretty much only shows up to stop Jimmy from dying in that safe. So, from my memory, I think I figured out the main difference between the older seasons and the later seasons. I really dig this episode. I'm kind of sad that we didn't see any Perry or Jimmy in this, but, you know, it's all to serve the story, which is fine. And I absolutely love Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson. Cannot get enough of him. I think his performance is great. The scene where he's telling Clark that they can't hold the guys that were smashing the porcelain figures because they don't have any evidence on them. They haven't done anything to break the law. I love that scene so much. It's great. So if you haven't seen this one, check it out. I cannot recommend it highly enough. And I think I kind of want to stray away from the rating system. I don't know if I mentioned that before in a previous episode, but I kind of just want to stray away from that a little bit. So I'm just going to go on a recommendation basis. And this one, I highly recommend checking out. Now, before we get to the last couple components of the show, we actually have some fan mail. It's one piece of fan mail, but, you know, it's great to see that people are still writing in every once in a while. This is from a good friend of mine, Dave McElveny. I really hope I pronounced that right. I'm terrible with last names, names in general, honestly. But, you know, him and I have, you know, we've been talking a lot on Facebook. You know, we comment and communicate with each other, and, you know, he's a real cool guy, real cool guy. So this is what he writes. Greetings, Mario. It's good to have you back on the microphone. 21. Huzzah. If I'm ever in the neighborhood, I'll buy your podcast a beer. I enjoyed this one quite a lot. It was good to hear you talk about the extreme split in fandom over Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. I fall into the "this movie is not made for me" camp, but it saddens me deeply to see and hear the level of vitriol directed from each side at the other. There are so many versions of Superman over his more than 75-year history that everyone should be able to find their Superman without attacking someone whose Superman is different. One of the values that falls under the umbrella of truth, justice, and the American way, for which Superman fights the never-ending battle, must certainly be tolerance of differences. On a similar note, I must confess that, as an old guy, I'm pretty much a child of the Silver Age, my initial reaction to John Byrne's Man of Steel and the changes it wrought was, at the time, absolute hatred. That didn't stop me from reading those comics, though, and eventually, gradually, I came to appreciate much, though not all, of Byrne's work. It's still not my favorite Superman, but I like it and even look back on some of it fondly. I liked your look at the talkative dummy. Did you watch The Adventures of Superman in reruns as a boy, or did you come to them later? I, myself, was just a hair too young to have seen them in their original run, but discovered them in reruns not long afterwards. By the way, the proper response to your super quote of Muhammad Ali at the end of the episode is, "Superman don't need no airplane either." Live long and prosper. Thank you so much for writing in, Dave. I really appreciate it. Regarding The Adventures of Superman, I didn't catch it as reruns, honestly. I know that they had played the show for quite a while in the early days of Nick at Night on Nickelodeon, but I wasn't into Superman at the time, and I think I might have been a smidge too young to have really known about it. Certainly, you know, not old enough to stay up past the dreaded 9 p.m. I really came into the world of George Reeves' Superman through, well, my local library, which is how I came into a lot of Superman. But I remember just one day just getting a hankering like no other to check out some comic book stuff. And, you know, where else to start but the big boy in blue, the one that really started it all. So, I can't tell you how many times I rented Look Up in the Sky, The Amazing Story of Superman. I've watched it so many times. It was one of the first things I bought when I got my first debit card. It holds a very special place in my heart, but that really showed me the history, or at least the media portrayal of Superman. And from that point on, I just checked out every Superman film that I could find. I found the Christopher Reeve films. I watched all of those almost religiously. I checked out the few DVDs they had from the Super Friends. I wouldn't even worry about which season it came from. If they had a disc from The Adventures of Superman, I would snatch that up and I would watch that to my heart's content. And that's how I really just got into the show. I just watched bits and pieces from all the seasons. And it wasn't until the release of Man of Steel that, you know, they started putting the DVDs back out again a little bit more heavily. And I was able to pick up the rest of the series, you know, for $10 a box set. So that was great. And, you know, I hadn't seen every episode till that point. But I did catch a lot of the more memorable ones, like the one I always go back to, Great Caesar's Ghost. Or the one where they go back in time to the time of the cavemen with Sterling Holloway. That one's a favorite of mine. Or the one where Superman is supposed to be marrying this one girl and the Daily Planet staff gets trapped at the bottom of the ocean. You know, just episodes like that. Or I think a couple of season 2 episodes, I remember. But that's how I really got into the show. So again, thank you for writing into the show. And, you know, if anybody else wants to write in the show, I absolutely welcome it. I love hearing from people who listen to the show. I like hearing what people think about what I think. But let's go into the super fact and the super quote. because right now my unedited runtime is 1 hour and 27 minutes, and it's been a bit of a long day. So for the super fact, we just passed this date too, but June 18th is the day that is traditionally recognized as the day that Kalos rocket landed on Earth. So yeah, happy Earth Arrival Day, or Earth Birthday. I've seen it as both. And for the super quote, this comes from J. Michael Straczynski, the author behind the Superman Earth One series, which has been really good, and the less than stellar Superman Grounded story. For a lot of people, Superman is and has always been America's hero. He stands for what we believe is the best within us. Limitless strength tempered by compassion that can bear adversity and emerge stronger on the other side. He stands for what we all feel we would like to be able to stand for when standing is hardest. Good night, folks. For more Up Up and Away, visit upupandaway.podomatic.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching Up Up and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through Twitter at MarioFanOfSteel, and can be emailed at mbenesse94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up Up and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network. Superman and all related properties are copyright DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.